Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Parenting Aces show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I am so excited about today's show. If you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you know that the NCAAs are going on right now in Champaign, Illinois. I've been tweeting my own stuff, retweeting from the NCAAs and from Colette Lewis of Zoo Tennis and from the various coaches and players. There's so much excitement going on up there this week and into the weekend. And, it's such a great, great tournament for our college players. Last year, the NCAAs were held in Athens, Georgia, which is a little over an hour from me, so I took advantage of that and was there several of the days. This year, it's a little bit further, so I didn't get to go, but hopefully I will be back there next year when the event is back in Athens. But today, we have as our guest, and I'm so excited about this, the assistant men's coach from the University of Florida, Amer Delek, who also played on the championship team at the University of Illinois. He was on the pro tour for a while. He has accomplished so much in tennis from his junior years up until actually today, and so much on the horizon. So I'm very excited to have him with us to talk about how his tennis career has developed and changed and wound about in various ways, and he's got a lot of great information to share with us. Before I bring him on the air, though, I do want to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, our guest, Amer Delek, if you'd like to call in and talk with him, that number, as always, is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. Going to a quick commercial, and when we come back, we'll jump right in with Amer.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I have with me on the air tennis legend Amer Delek. Amer, are you there?
Well, legend is quite a strong word, but I appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, you're a legend for me, and I have been watching you, since you were on the pro tour, your college days. My kids were still a little young, and I wasn't as into the college tennis scene when you were playing, but I'm just so excited to have you on the show and to have you share your tennis experiences with my listeners. So thank you so much for being here. And I know you're in the midst of craziness up in Illinois. So give us a little feel for what the atmosphere is like up there.
It is pretty awesome. I mean, it obviously, I'm going to be a little biased because it is in Champaign, and you know, to get the national championship here in my old courts, my old stomping ground, a lot had to go into this, and it all started back in, you know, in even '90s when Craig Tiley, that was my coach at the time, went to his first NCAAs, and he was in Athens, obviously, and he felt like it was a huge advantage for the Georgia players and the fans. So he said that, you know, eventually down the road when we get better, that we'd like to host also. So that was the kind of the whole idea behind hosting the NCAAs. And I think it's great, just you know, experience for everybody to go travel around the U.S. and because every college campus has something to offer. And it just so again, just to summarize, it's a great experience seeing all these other schools come in here to our place where my, you know, college career started and where, you know, I use this college career as a stepping stone also towards my professional career. So. It's a great atmosphere. The players are giving their best. There's some great matches. First couple of nights, there were some really late matches, but everybody's here. Still some great matches to come today. Women's semifinals and men's semifinals. So I'm looking forward to being out there and as a spectator also, and seeing what these other teams are doing great. What made them get to this point, and learning from that.
That's fantastic. And you had a special night while you were up there. Why don't you share with my listeners about the wonderful celebration that you got to experience?
Yeah, so this year's championship, 2013, marks the 10-year anniversary since we won the national title here at the University of Illinois. And it was a first of all, I'm just talking to you about it right now. I'm getting the chills because right as soon as somebody mentions the 2003 national championships, it right away I have this like visual, vivid memory of us, you know, running down on the court when Chris Martin won it at number six and clinched it against Vanderbilt, and you know, it was a great experience. And so 10 years later, here we are. And it wasn't just the team from that year. It was all the teams from early 90s. As a matter of fact, Craig Tiley flew in from Australia here to be here with us. We had about, you know, 50 or so alums that came in from all over the U.S. And it was just a great, great, great experience. Like I said, rehashing all the memories and rehashing all the stories. And just fun, actually. It wasn't just one night. It was about a couple nights, and everybody, actually, most of the guys left yesterday, and we're already talking about the next reunion. So it just gives you an idea of how good it was.
That's fantastic, and it's funny because we've touched on the importance of team building and winning championships on various shows on Parenting Aces when we've talked about choosing colleges. And, you know, to hear you say that you still get those goosebumps 10 years later it just underlines the importance of why you need to choose the right school as a junior player and, you know, really look at what it is you're hoping to gain from your college tennis experience. And we're going to touch on that a little bit later in the show. I definitely want to hear your thoughts on that. But just to give our listeners a bit of a background on you, you started as a junior player, and your family actually, did they move from Bosnia to Florida for your tennis, or was it just coincidental?
It was actually very coincidental. I'll give you a little bit of background. I was born in Bosnia, in Tuzla, Bosnia. It's northeast part of Bosnia, and born in '82. And it was actually by accident also how I started playing tennis. When I was about 6 years old, as a kid, I had like numerous health issues with pneumonia, bronchitis. Just all the time, I had a hard time just breathing in general, and the city that I lived in actually was quite polluted. So one just a weekend, my dad, you know, sent my mom and my sister to a to the mountains where there was a little more fresh air, and so we stayed actually there more than a weekend. It was about a week or so, and then when he came to pick us up, he brought me a gift, and it was a wooden racket. And so he said, when I get back to the city, he signed me up for classes because he wanted me to be active and just, you know, try to, at least through exercise, help my health. And so when I got back, I was signed up for classes and or just clinic. And so I showed up, and we had one club in the city. I mean, the city itself is about 150,000 people, but the club that we had was like one of the best in the old Yugoslavia. I mean, there was junior, you know, 12, 14, 16 national championships. There were champions that were coming out of there. There was something about it. And tennis in Bosnia and ex-Yugoslavia in general was the number two sport. I mean, you had soccer, obviously, number one, but then you had, you know, tennis at the time. You know, these are some names that probably a lot of people will not remember, but Goran Perpich and Zivojinovic, and then later on, actually, a few years after I started playing tennis, Monica Seles, who actually a lot of people here in the U.S. don't know. She was from Yugoslavia, so she played for Yugoslavia, and so she was somebody that actually I used to watch and, you know, always cheer for, and then Goran Ivanišević, and so tennis was very, very popular where I was growing up. So the city, again, like I said, there was one club, and I got signed up for classes. I just got put in a group with these kids, and a lot of people know I'm very tall right now, but I was always actually tall as a kid. And so there was something about being tall and being able to actually hold on to the racket and with one hand instead of two hands that helped me. So at a super early age, I was 6 years old, here I have this wooden racket, and I'm being taught a one-handed backhand, and I just loved it right away. And so, so I started just playing tennis on red clay with these clinics once a week, but actually I played tennis every day, and because we had this wall, it was a tennis wall, so all the kids would gather, and we would just have one ball, and we play these games where we would draw the lines in the clay and then just hit off the ball, and like one person would hit it and jump out, other person would jump. So we did that for hours and days and whatever. And then my parents saw that, all right, you know, he really likes it. So they started, you know, putting me on more clinics, not just once a week. And I started, you know, getting some private lessons here and there. And I loved it. And when I was 8 years old, I went to my first tournament. It was a 12 and unders because there was no such thing as a 10 and unders, and it just had 12 and unders. And so here I am at 8 years old, go to a tournament, and my first match, I did not win a game. As a matter of fact, came off the court crying, just was, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
But,
so my parents were like, nah, you'll be fine. And so I went back and started playing, practicing again a little bit more. And so at 8 years old, so that was in 1990. The following year, 1991, when the whole thing started kind of falling apart in Yugoslavia, you know, with the war. And 91, it started in Slovenia, then moved on to Croatia. And then in 92 was when my country started, or Bosnia now, tennis was not a priority, let's put it that way. We came to the point, it was actually in April of 92, that my mom, my sister, and I got on one of the last buses out of our city, and we were refugees, and we escaped to Croatia, where I had an uncle. And in order to get to Croatia, we actually had to go through the territory that was occupied by the aggressor. We got through, and then actually had to get on a raft to get across the river because the bridges were already destroyed. And then on the other side, my uncle was waiting for us. And so then that's how I ended up in Zagreb in Croatia. And my dad had to stay and fight in the war. So then,
wow.
But then actually, yeah. So when once I got to Zagreb, I was it was my sister, who was 15 months older than me. My mom and I, we lived with my uncle and his family. So it was like seven of us in a was technically a one in a one bedroom apartment. And so lived there, and just like in you know, Bosnia and Croatia, tennis was very popular. So there was just like clubs around there, and there was a tennis club that was a walking distance from where my uncle lived. So one of the things that I did was I brought my racket with me. In the three bags that my mom was able to pack up, I brought one racket with me. And at the time, I was already moved on to a graphite racket. I actually had a Prince graphite. I moved on from the wooden racket. And once I got there, it was the same thing. I actually went, they had a wall. It's something, it's very like here in U.S., you never ever see a wall, tennis wall. But that's something that I grew up playing on, because just because you didn't have as many courts, you couldn't get a court time. So you couldn't get, plus, you know, if you couldn't get a partner or somebody to hit with, you just go out there by yourself and practice. And So there was another wall, and I went over there and just started playing. And by that time, so I was already, you know, playing for about 3 years, and I was starting to get a little, and I grew a little bit more. So I was getting okay. I was playing okay, and so I could go out there on my own and hit ball. So and then kind of same, you know, like I said, I was hitting on the wall, and then I got asked by a local pro right there. Said, hey, you know, are you where are you from and all that. So I just said, you know, I kind of told him my story. I just got there, and he said, listen, he's like, there's a we have actually a tournament here tomorrow. He's like, if you want to sign in, he's like, I'll just sign you in. And they were probably low on numbers. And so I said, sure, you know, let me just go ask my mom. Let me ask my mom if that's all right. And so I did, and I played a tournament, and I did. I got to the finals. And it was actually, wow. I lost a guy that I ended up actually playing in a pros years later. This guy from Croatia. He was also a top 100 player, Roko Karanušić. And so I became friends with him there, and so then I just started. Actually, I got invited just to hit at the club, and so I was just hitting with other kids, and my mom actually started working at that club, and so I was just spending like all days with her over there, and just hitting with random people. Honestly, there were times when, so I was about 10 years old at the time. I was hitting with, you know, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds. Didn't matter. It was just staying out there and playing, and so that's kind of how I continued to play tennis in Croatia. And then my dad, when he was able to get out of Bosnia, you know, some 10 months later, we stayed in Croatia for another, it was 2.5 years from then. And then when the war actually finished in 90, it was December of 95, it was, the peace treaty was signed in Dayton, Ohio, and the war finished, and it was actually time for us to either move back to Bosnia or go through sign up for like a refugee program through an international organization for migration to start a new life somewhere else, because you know there are numerous programs that help families, you know, from war torn countries, you know, go somewhere and start a new life. And my parents decided to, all right, we're gonna give this a try. And not expecting honestly anything out of it, but they were in their 30s at the time, late 30s at the time, and they saw that future for us in Bosnia was not bright. You know, after the war, all the infrastructure, all the corruption, just drugs, everything was just kind of, it was not the same environment that it was before the war. And obviously it wasn't to be expected, but that was just a reality. So we signed up for a program, and we got picked to go for an interview. And in the interview, they asked us, hey, do you have any family anywhere that you would possibly like to go to see if we can maybe connect you with somebody in some other country. And we actually had a cousin that went through a similar program that was sent to Jacksonville, Florida.
Wow.
And so just like that, we said, yeah, we have actually a cousin that's in Jacksonville, Florida. And they said, all right, that's where you're going. So in May of 96, we packed up 4 bags and $1,000, and we were sponsored to come to Jacksonville, Florida through Lutheran Social Services. And so we ended up in Jacksonville, Florida, moved in with our cousin, again, like a 2-bedroom apartment. And again, we brought 4 bags, and in one of those bags I packed up, I had 2 rackets at the time, so I brought 2 rackets. And just like that, like I said, it came in 96, didn't speak a word of English. My parents didn't speak a word of English. And we had a translator that took us to school to get signed up for classes. And so this was May, towards the end of the school year. And I'm in a guidance office, and they asked me, they're like, all right, do you play any sports? And I said, yeah, I'll play tennis. I didn't know there was such a thing as high school tennis. I didn't know there was college tennis. We didn't come here because of tennis. We came here because, it's just family wanted to start a new life. And so about 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in my class, and I get pulled out of class by this gentleman, and he said, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm the high school tennis coach, and our season is over, but, some of the guys are still playing, and, would you want to come out and hit? And I said, sure, I'll do it. I didn't touch my rackets in, 2 months or so. So I go out there and hit with these guys. And he comes and picks me up because we didn't have a car or anything. He takes me in, and I just, beat up on these kids. And so he's like, oh.
That wasn't very nice.
I know, I was just playing. I wanted to just prove to myself that I can still play. And so,
sure.
So he's like, wow, you're pretty good. Again, kind of same thing. He said, hey, listen, he was living in Jacksonville, so he was a school teacher, but his father lived in Ponte Vedra Beach at this country club. And he said, listen, they have a tournament there. Would you want to play it? So this is literally deja vu from Croatia. About a tournament, and it was a 16 and under tournament, and it was on clay. And I grew up on red clay, and I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. And so he comes, as a matter of fact, the day before he comes and picks me up, picks me and my dad up, and he takes me to the store to buy me shoes because I had a pair of shoes that I brought with me, and because of all the sliding on clay, I had a hole on the side. And so, but that was a pair of shoes that I had that I just bought with me. And so he went and bought me a pair of shoes. And I went on next day, same thing, him, my dad, and I, we go. And I go and I played the 16-under tournament. I make the finals. And I lose in the finals because I ran out of rackets. I had to use his racket. I broke both of my strings. And and so here I am. I was 13 still. I was still 13 at the time playing a 16 and under. And just all of a sudden, and you know how the world of tennis is so small, the buzz about me, about this kid from Bosnia that's here as a refugee and, does this at a tournament, and the word just quickly gets around. And about a week later, I get a phone call, and it was from the ATP headquarters, which are at Ponte Vedra Beach, in the same, 5 minutes away from that club that I played that tournament. And they said, hey, we're so-and-so. We would like to bring you out to our ATP headquarters out here. We have a summer camp, and, would you be interested to come out? And at that point, so this was already about a month or 2 months into it. So I'm already starting to speak the language a little bit. So, probably my grammar was awful, my lack of vocabulary and all that, but I was able to find ways to just kind of communicate. And so they tell me, listen, we know your parents, whatever. They knew that I didn't have a car, so they said, listen, we'll send out a chauffeur. So here I am, 13 years old. I'm getting a chauffeur from ATP to 40 feet. It was like about 40 minutes away from where we live at the time. Come and pick me up. It would be me and my mom, and took me out to the ATP headquarters and to hit with other kids. And the guy behind this whole thing was actually, it was two gentlemen, and one was Brian Gottfried, who's still a great friend and a mentor, and then Ricardo Acuna, actually, who was a USTA coach for many years, and he just took me under his wing and just helped me out. I mean, I could never ever thank him for what he did or what the club, Brian Godfrey, did and the ATP and all that. It was amazing. And so they took me under their wings and just started involving me in the academy there. And but obviously after a week or so they couldn't keep sending a chauffeur out for me. So instead I actually would find ways with other kids that were going out there, and I would just, find a way out there, go practice, come back. My sister would maybe, pick me up and drop me off and whatever. But I was just finding ways to hit with kids in town and play local tournaments, and that's kind of how my junior career in U.S. started. And for the first, actually, year and a half or so, actually 2 years, I wasn't even allowed to play like state designated tournaments because I still wasn't a resident. So finally, once mm-hmm. I was able to get that, I started to play tournaments that actually counted for something. And from right away, so this was actually, I was since 16 was the first year that I was able to play state tournaments and was number one in the state. And from there on, I was just, honestly, it was like a snowball effect of being helped out then by this Bobby Curtis and the Florida section, and then being helped out by the USTA and was able to do well in the juniors and then went on to my college career.
What a fascinating story.
Well, thank you. I mean, there's a lot more to this story, but I just feel like I'm rambling right now. But it's pretty amazing. Again, just how it's all happened and happened for a reason, and here I am in Champaign now as a coach and trying to help out some of these other kids. Hopefully, have a story like that they can tell like this. Maybe not the whole war thing, but at least the success in tennis.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, go to commercial. When we come back, I want to talk about your transition from juniors to college. But before we do that, a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with Amr Dalek.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. I am here with Amr Dalek, who has been sharing his fascinating journey through junior tennis. And for those of you listening, if you'd like to call in and chat with us, our number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. Amr, let's jump ahead a bit. You mm-hmm. had an incredible junior career, obviously. How were you able to make the decision of going the college route versus turning pro?
Well, the whole background, my family, I, first of all, financially, there was no way I could have afforded to go pro. A lot of people are unaware of the expenses that are occurred at, when you're on the road, when you're traveling. Even though I was approached, as a matter of fact, it was my senior year in high school, I was approached by a couple agents about the possibility, and I had actually some close friends of mine, like Eric Nunez, somebody that I played juniors with, and he was my actually a doubles partner in the juniors. He's a UST coach now, but he was approached and he decided to turn pro. I went the different route and went to the college because, like I said, my parents could not afford if for some reason I did not succeed, I wasn't able to, you know, do well. They could not afford to support me because when they came over here, they were not speaking English. They were working the minimum wage. As a matter of fact, you know, first jobs were at a bookbindery in Florida at a bookbindery factory, technically. So for them to be able to just, you know, give all this cash for me to do it, it was just not going to happen. And they were looking ahead. You know, what if you get injured? What, you know, all these questions and but more actually, the more important than anything is they knew the value of education. They knew that, you know, both of them were. They were never able to finish college. As a matter of fact, in Bosnia, because they started working early and started family early, so they never got to finish the college. And so they wanted both of us, you know, when we came here to U.S. looking for a better future, they understood that like I said, the value of education. So, and another point which I think is very important is that we. Even when I was 16, already started playing, you know, state tournaments and whatever, we were still not aware of the whole college recruiting process or any of college tennis. Like I said, it was still like just a big question mark for me. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know the University of Florida was, you know, an hour away from us. I didn't know their program. I didn't know their success. I didn't know any other schools that were, you know, the reason why I say it's the University of Florida is because here it is technically my backyard, and I had no idea about it, mm-hmm. let alone University of Illinois, where I ended up going to school. So all of these were just it was a learning experience for all of us. But again, you know, going to college was, you know, looking back at it, the best decision I ever made. And, going to Illinois was a great decision also. And that's also another story that I think later on in this interview I'll probably get to it. But again, you know, college is a great stepping stone for a majority of the kids coming up in the juniors. So.
And you stayed at Illinois all 4 years, yes?
I did not, actually. After my junior year, after the success that we had as a team, I also won the individual title, and our number two double team, it was Rajiv Ram and Brian Wilson that won the double title. So it was a triple crown. It was something that wasn't done in a while and wasn't done by too many schools. I think it was Stanford is the only one. And also the success, actually, I had in even my sophomore year, I felt that I did it, everything that I could in my tennis college career in those years, and the window of opportunity to turn pro and play professional tennis is small. Mm-hmm. But I also had, which was great, actually, I had the opportunity of going out there playing, and whenever I felt like I was done, I had enough on the tour, or injuries or whatever, I had the opportunity to come back here and finish my education. So that's actually exactly what I did in 2009 after my first knee injury. I came back to school here in the fall and took 22 hours and finished up my degree, and then went back out and try to train again, and then actually had my surgery, and then eventually in 2010 I was playing again. But that was, like I said, a great experience of 3 years. Looking back at it, the guys give me a little bit of a hard time of like, oh, man, why did you leave? Because the following year, which would have been my senior year, guys ended up keeping the streak of – actually, they had it 64 straight wins and made it to the semifinals the following year and ended up losing. And that was without actually myself and Rajiv Ram, because we both of us turned pro at the same time. So it would have been great winning again, absolutely. There's no regrets. The guys actually on the team were the ones that fully supported my decision. They understood at the time. You know, when I was making the decision, because I took the fall off after my junior year, I was playing just, you know, I got the wild card to U.S. Open. I ended up losing 5 sets, 7-5 in the third or fifth, and had a couple wins on the ATP tour and won a future and whatever. So I had some success, but I was still, even late in October of that year, I was still wasn't sure if I was going to come back for the spring or if I was going to turn pro. And finally, after a conversation with my parents, you know, they told me, they're like, listen, either decision that you make is the right one, but you need to make a decision, and that way you can just go forward with it instead of, you know, being, you know, what, you know, do I go, do I do this or not do this? Either way, if you go back to school, do that and do that 100%. If you're going to turn pro, do that and do that 100%. And so I finally made a decision to turn pro. And my first pro event was a future in Lubbock, Texas, and ended up losing in the first round to Alex Kuznetsov and picking up my first check for I think my first check was for about $157. and after passing up the US Open money and Indianapolis ATP and Washington DC ATP, so I passed up on a lot of these pro big checks, instead picked up a, you know, $100 check in Lubbock, Texas. But I tell you what, it was probably the sweetest $180, because I knew, all right, this is the decision, this is what I'm going with. So
that's fantastic. Well, I want to jump ahead because I need to have you back on the show. You have so many great stories and so much information to share, and the time is going way too quickly. I want to let our listeners know that while you are the assistant men's coach at University of Florida right now, and you will stay with your team in Champaign as the guys compete in the individual event, you won't be returning to Florida next year. You are happily engaged to be married and are moving to Austin, Texas. So congratulations on that. I know Florida's going to be really, really bummed to lose you. Brian Shelton is one of our Atlanta guys, and he's had a great first season down in Florida, and, you know, I'm sure he's going to miss having you there. But I'm going to skip a little bit ahead because I really want to hear what your thoughts are as you make the transition from coaching at the collegiate level to going back into junior tennis, and what lessons you're going to be able to take as both a collegiate player and a collegiate coach to the courts with these young guys coming up, young guys and girls, I should say, coming up.
Well, first of all, just to talk about my experience right now at University of Florida, it was an unbelievable experience. The year that I spent there with the guys and the coaches, actually Brian Shelton and our volunteer assistant Scott Perelman, who was a former also head coach, and it was a great learning experience for me. It was not a job that I was looking for. It just happened so that last year at this time, I was actually at Queens, and I tore my Queens London, and I tore my MCL, my the same knee where I had my previous surgery, and I was kind of forced obviously forced to retire, and I flew back to Florida, and just through a mutual friend, I had within 3 days of landing back and starting my rehab on my knee, I got a phone call actually from Brian. It was on a Monday, and I knew known Brian since I was about 16 or so. On a Wednesday, I went down to Gainesville for an interview. On a Friday, I had the offer. And on Friday, it was just, like I said, it happened so that Brian and I just, you know, hit it off right away with just the ideas, using my experience off the tour, using my collegiate experience in bringing in, you know, fresh ideas. And with him also coming from the women's side and Georgia Tech, obviously the court is still the same size and the tennis ball is still the same size, but there is a little bit of a different dynamic dealing with the guys, dealing with the girls. And so we, like I said, we hit it off. And on Friday, when Brian, offered me a job, it was time for me to make the decision. All right, is this, am I really hanging up my rackets and I'm getting into college tennis? And it didn't take long for me to make the decision and say, yes, this is it. This is what I want to do because of my experience that I had in college, and because I know that was probably the best platform at the time to use my experience and knowledge to help these guys. And so I took the job and jumped into it right away. And honestly, it's again, great experience and learning, not just learning, from Brian as far as the coaching part, but also learning from the guys. And because we started a team and we had 7 guys on the team. 7 different personalities, and how do you deal with all these guys? Obviously, I've had the pleasure and the privilege of having some great coaches in my career, from even starting back in Bosnia to Ricardo Acuna, who's a mentor, to Brian Gottfried, great player and a great coach, and then in college with Craig Tiley and Bruce Burke, who took pride in developing, and that's something that I want to do from technical standpoint, but also strategy and understanding the game. Later on in my career, I was fortunate to meet a guy, Craig O'Shaughnessy, who's going to be partners now with me at the academy. He was the one that actually taught me a lot, and I wish I had him at some of the earlier stages in my game because it would have helped my professional career. But, it is what it is, and I can use that knowledge now and help develop some of these kids. And by developing these kids, I mean at the academy, these are going to be players from 8, 10, 12 years old that are going to be able to learn from technical development. I'm going to be able to implement my knowledge and then also develop them as players, not just the ball strikers. And so that's the whole idea behind this academy down in Austin. But going back to the whole, collegiate and this step now that I'm taking, through our knowledge, we're going to be able to help these kids develop and go into college more prepared. And so I'm looking forward to this challenge, and it's definitely going to be a challenge because in the past I haven't really worked with younger kids other than just hitting with them, at pro-ams and whatnot. But either way, I'm very confident in my tennis knowledge, and I hope to, as my other friend Craig Boynton said, it's time for me to serve others, and no pun intended. So.
Wow. I mean, your story is absolutely incredible. And again, considering that the audience for Parenting Aces is tennis parents, mm-hmm. I have to ask you, having parents who came to this country not speaking English, mm-hmm. not familiar with any of the systems in the U.S., much less how junior tennis worked, how was it for you as a young athlete Were your parents involved in your tennis at all, or were they so focused on making a life for the family that they really didn't have the time to do that?
Well, my parents traveled with me for the first time outside of Jacksonville to see me. Actually, first time my parents came to watch me play outside of Jacksonville, Florida, was in Champaign, Illinois. It was probably, I think, my sophomore year already. So only only time they got to watch me play was in Jacksonville. If I was playing a local tournament in Jacksonville, it was really, you know, like I said, they were working. And I had my sister also who was working and studying. And so I, as a matter of fact, in juniors, I got to the times that I was traveling outside of Jacksonville was I would get connected with some other families and I would travel with them. You know, even at when I started traveling, when I started being invited to, I don't know, intersectionals or clay courts or nationals and whatnot, I would either you know, call the tournaments and ask about housing. Well, this is, you know, by the time I'm 16, or I just traveled on my own and then just joined another family that would be at the city, and I would just stay with them and whatnot. So it was great in the fact that I was forced to mature a lot quicker, and I was forced to, you know, become independent and figure out all these things on my own when I was on the road. But at the same time, you know, looking back, I wish my parents got the chance to at least watch me play a little bit more. Thankfully, you know, once I was on the tour, they were able to get out a little bit more often, but still not enough. I mean, they came and watched me play at the U.S. Open a couple times. You know, Miami, Sony Ericsson, they were down there almost every year. You know, some of the closer ones. My sister, I got to take my sister to when I was in one of the first years that I played the French Open and whatnot. So it was that aspect. I wish that they got to travel with me a little bit more. But at the same time, you know, being out on my own helped me really mature a lot quicker and become a lot more independent and find ways a little bit.
Well, so how do you think that's going to impact your kind of philosophy as a junior coach? Because one of the things that I write about a lot in mm-hmm. my blog is, you know, how involved should I be as a parent, and at what point do you step back and let your child take over? How much interaction is there with the coach and the parent, and all of those types of issues? It'll be curious to me, you know, to see how you kind of integrate your personal experience, basically handling your tennis yourself from the get-go. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you had some great mentors that stepped in and helped, but your parents were not the ones running the show. You and your coaches definitely were. And how that will translate, you know, now that you'll be coaching and dealing with obnoxious tennis parents like me who want to have a say in everything. And, you know, I mean, have you given any thought to that yet?
Absolutely, I have. I mean, obviously, there are some horror stories out there with the tennis.
Sure.
I mean, you have, you know, Tomic story, Bernard Tomic and his father.
Yeah.
You have, you know, all those extreme cases, but for every Bernard, or whatever, Tomic story, I mean, there's plenty of smart parents and you know, reasonable parents, let's put it that way. But my thought on this is that there definitely needs to be a communication. I mean, everybody needs to be on the same page. Even though my parents had zero tennis knowledge, zero background, were not there, you know, on the court with me or behind the fence, they still were had a huge impact on my development and my career. For everything that I did, I always consulted my parents. Even you know, the last few years on tour, even whatever, I mean, they were directly involved in everything. Even, you know, when I was talking about, you know, switching coaches or whatever it was, they were involved in it. Yeah, they were not there yelling how to, you know, yelling at me and telling me how to hit a forehand or backhand. But, you know, there were times where, you know, my dad, you know, when I was younger, or my mom too, you know, they had to, you know, push me a little bit and whatnot. But they never, ever, ever were the ones that were like micromanage a coach and tell them, I think you guys should do this or something like that. No, they were always, like I said, they developed a relationship with my coaches and were communicating, but never ordering something, you know, what needs to be done or whatever. So that's kind of, I think that is, again, I'm going to be biased because that's how I did it and how I think I honestly have no regrets about it. But I see too many coaches out or parents out there that just either put too much pressure on their kids or just it becomes where it's more about the parent than the actual kid, and it's kind of sad. I was actually, you know, seeing some of that when I was in my year of recruiting, and it's just, it would be good just to let these kids, you know, give them, take a step back and just let them develop into a player, into a person, you know, themselves. Because again, listen, this is just a game. It's tennis is just a small percentage of me, myself, because I know that I knew that eventually I was going to stop playing tennis, but I knew that I want the people to know me as more of a mere delic, the, you know, the a person, not a mere delic, the tennis player. Yes, tennis opened up a million doors for me, and I would not be here in U.S. Doing what I am doing now without the game of tennis. I'll always be thankful for it, but we got to put it all in perspective that, hey, it's just a game. We want these kids. You know, the main reason, again, going back to my story of how I started playing is just for the health issues, for the health purpose. And so, you know, that's, you got to look at it that way. You know, small, it's just a small percentage, but, you know, you got to be realistic about it and just let your kid, I know it's cliche, but you have to let the kid enjoy it before any, you know, taking any steps further.
Sure, and I mean, I'll say, you know, from a personal standpoint, my tennis player is 16 and a half now, my son, and I recently was told that the sophomore year of high school is the most challenging time with these players. They're you know, kind of getting a taste of life outside of tennis. If they go to traditional school, they're seeing the social pressures and the other things that are out there luring them away from the court, and helping him to find joy in his game has been a huge, huge challenge this year. And it's been an up and down the entire school year. Mm-hmm. And this is our last week of school, and I swear I have never been happier to see a school year come to an end than I am this year. I'm so ready to put it behind us because it's been a huge challenge. And I think, you know, your statement about keeping in mind why is your kid playing in the first place? They're playing because, you know, they either saw somebody and said, hey, that looks like fun, I want to do it, or for health reasons, or whatever reason they stumbled upon the game. But when they started, there was a joy there. There was an enjoyment. Yeah. There was happiness. And I think it's very easy for that to get lost along the way. And and for us as parents to lose sight of it as well, because, you know, let's face it, it's not a cheap sport. It's not cheap in terms of money. It's not cheap in terms of time commitment. And tennis families in general, and you know, you're an exception, I think, to the rule. But for the most part, kids that are playing tennis, their parents are giving up a lot of time to, you know, take them to tournaments, take them to practices or whatever. So there are expectations that come along with that, and, you know, trying to keep things in perspective, as you say, is, it's a challenge, definitely a challenge. So we're down to our last 5 minutes, and before we finish, I want to give you an opportunity to to share because you said you wanted to touch on your experience in Champaign, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that for a few minutes before we have to finish.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think at the beginning of this podcast, you mentioned about, you know, being in a team environment and picking a school because of the right type of, you know, people are going to be there. It's not just about the name of the school. And I think that's where a lot of players make the mistake of where do you go and why do you go to the school? For me, I was scheduled for a few different visits, obviously five maximum that you have, but I was scheduled for all five. And the first trip that I took was in October like 15th, to Champaign, Illinois. So here I am coming from Jacksonville, Florida, coming up to Champaign, and it was raining here. You know, leaves are on the ground, and it's definitely not as bright as Florida, but that for me was not the biggest issue. For me was I knew that at that point, so I had a very good college career. Junior career, and I wanted to take the next step. And for me, taking that next step meant that I need to be in an environment where I'm going to develop, but also have a good time and be surrounded by the right people. And that's, I had the pleasure, obviously, that was one of my recruiting trip. I wasn't the only one. Michael Calkins was there at the same time. And after that 48 hours that I spent here in Champaign, I knew that, all right, these are the guys that were already on the team. And then Michael, and I knew a couple of others that were going to come. I said, all right, these are the guys that I want to surround myself with for the next 4 years. I want to, you know, we want to push each other and I know that we're going to have a good time. And that's kind of, it was a gut feeling, and I came back and I canceled all my other trips. I never went to anywhere else. That was it. And
wow.
Yeah. And so, but it was just, like I said, it was a gut feeling, and you can just feel that energy when you come in, and it's just the right people, right energy, right, everything just felt it was the right place for me. And were there times during my whatever 3 years that I was here that I was like, oh man, I wish, you know, I was in Florida right now or somewhere in a warm place? Yes. But that all the other stuff, all the other positive things that were there, you know, spending time with Craig and Bruce and developing and getting better and you know, pushing other guys and other guys pushing me. I mean, it was that outweighs all the other things. But again, you know, I had the fortune of being with Craig for those years that I was here. And one thing that he preached always is if you want to be successful, surround yourself with successful people. And that could not have been, you know, more true than, you know, what we had here, is that you come back here right now for the reunion, and the guys that were on that team, the guys that were on the teams before, I mean, these are all very successful people. Not just whatever in tennis, you know, some of the guys that played pro, but got just in life. I mean, you have, you know, people working for whatever, Goldman Sachs, startup companies, clothing companies. For example, Michael Calkins, who, like I said, was here on the recruiting trip with me and is my best friend, and we, you know, we're all at each other's weddings and whatever. I mean, he's the one that started up Athletic DNA, who I'm sure you are aware of. For every junior tournament that you go to, they're all over the place. And I mean,
sure.
So it's just like I said, you know, you want to, when you go and you're picking out the college, you want to see the people that are going to be there, the people that are going to push you around. It's not just about, you know, how good the football team is at that school and all that. Because every school will offer something, but it's all about what you make out of it. And you know, if you have the right people around you, that's gonna make your experience. So,
great advice. And on that note,
yeah.
I'm gonna bring us to a close. I need to just let our listeners know I am actually getting the opportunity to travel to the French Open next week.
Yeah.
And so our next 3 weeks of podcast will actually be reruns of past shows, but I do urge everybody to tune in. And Amar, if you've got any tips for me to make the most of my French Open experience, tweet them to me, please. I'm looking to maximize my 2 days there and my time in Paris. So thank you again for being with us and sharing your experience. I hope you'll come back once you get settled in Austin and get your academy underway there. I sure would love to check in with you and hear how things are going. So best of luck to you. Congratulations on your engagement. And thank you again for being here. To my listeners, have a great week. Thanks for tuning in. And I'll be back live with you guys in 3 weeks. In the meantime, enjoy. Hope you get to watch lots of French Open on TV. And look for me in the stands. I'll be there June 1st and June 2nd in Chatrier. And I'll be the one with the big grin on my face. So have a great week, everybody.
Enjoy it.